Hi, you're tuning in to R1A Review with me, Cynthia Ng. Joining me on the show today is Raja Hamzah Abidin. He is the managing partner of RHL Ventures. RHL is a venture capital and a private investment firm that focuses on technology companies in Southeast Asia. And Hamzah is also one of the founders. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me, Cynthia.
Now, I want to start with RHL's story. It was born in 2016. You had three founders. Tell us about that. How did it all begin?
So actually, RHL had an interesting history over the past few years. So I was working in Hong Kong at that time, together with my other co-founder, Rachel. And we spoke about how Southeast Asia was growing. You could see that in the public markets, but at the same time, you could see that in the private markets as well. And being in Hong Kong, you could see the growth that will happen in China, with a lot of technology companies over there, what happened with Alibaba, Tencent. We felt that Southeast Asia, and especially Malaysia, was primed to take the next step forward. So we spoke about coming back and contributing back to the ecosystem. So I was working in a family office over there. She was working at a private equity fund over in Hong Kong. We actually discussed on what's the best way to tackle the ecosystem in Southeast Asia, especially focusing on Malaysia. So if you look at the ecosystem at that time, 2016, obviously public markets is a place that's dominated by the sovereign wealth funds. So your EPFs, Khazanas of the world corner that space. But when you look at private markets, there was only Credo and Navis were around, maybe CMS Opus as well. So there's only a very few players. And you could see there was a big gap there in terms of investors. And speaking to a lot of the families that we are close with, it was a trend of private investments coming to fore, whether it's property, whether it's infrastructure. Everyone was looking to private assets to grow their wealth. So we felt like at that time, 4 years ago, was the right time to come back and build a private markets business. And that's how we thought about building RHL. And how RHL came together was actually when we started, it was Rachel, myself, and there was another co-founder called Lionel. But at the same time, over the past couple of years, we brought more partners in. That's because we wanted to increase our different sectors of expertise. So Jojo got brought in, she's from the Nirvana family. Brought Chen Shun, who's from a family in Singapore. And we just want to build our expertise base where when we invest in a company, we have the right expertise to grow the business. When we build RHL, we do minority growth investments into a business. We focus on technology, because I feel like technology is in everything that we do right now. Mm-hmm. Technology enables the company to grow tenfold. And that's why we want to be on the forefront in investing in that.
So what would you say makes RHL different from other private investment firms that we have? What is RHL Ventures in terms of your investment?
So I think the main big difference with a lot of peers, and I would say our peers are across Southeast Asia rather than just Malaysia. Mm-hmm. So if you talk about Malaysia, it's a very small pool, but Southeast Asia is where the real game is. Yeah. The funds in Singapore, the funds in Indonesia. I think the difference is we built our platform from a corporate first approach. We always think about how you want to partner with the different corporates to grow a business. So some startups talk about disrupting traditional businesses. Mm-hmm. The business we invest disrupt, but at the same time work together with these corporates. For instance, a company called Atap, an ID platform that we invested in, they basically list ID jobs, and ID interior designers can actually bid for those jobs. They've partnered with Masing, for instance, to list some of those jobs. And there's a way where they win business and Masing wins business by selling more property through their ID services. So it's a win-win solution for both companies. So where we come in is we invest, but we also have built a good selection of LPs from different corporate bases, whether from property, manufacturing, consumer, to healthcare.
Diverse sectors,
yes,
that you invest in.
So when we invest in those sectors, in technology companies and sectors, we have the right partners to help them grow. Mm-hmm. For instance, for health metrics, when we invested, we introduced them to a few corporates like Nirvana, Top Glove, KLK. We help with that, we help them grow the business tenfold instead of just twofold.
When you guys started, you got quite a bit of attention because of the prominent backgrounds that you guys come from. Your father was the former Minister of Federal Territories.
Correct.
Jojo, like you mentioned, Nirvana Group, and Rachel's father was also a notable investor.
Yes.
Help us understand that family relationship. Is it family money when it first started? How would it be?
So when it first started, it was actually all seeded by our own personal, a bit of family money. And that's when we started investing, was to bring all a second generation together to invest. I think the idea was bringing like-minded people to invest together. And it was simple as that. It was supposed to be more of a, like a super angel platform where even, let's say, you, me, and a few other people can invest together. But at the same time, we realized that we do have strong backing. We were blessed. I mean, you embrace what you're blessed with, but this time you use that platform to build something more. So, for instance, with some of our family members are on our advisory boards, mm-hmm. they do not take a decision-making role in the organization, but they provide advice. And the more important part is they give advice to our startups. Mm-hmm. So they've seen, let's say if you're running a plantation business for the past 40 years, you know what plantation needs. So you give that advice to the portfolio companies on how to target plantation companies. So those kind of things help. Mm-hmm. And for me personally is, you've been blessed to be given a platform. Better maximize the hell out of it, right? If not, what's the point of having even a platform to begin with?
So when you first came back to Malaysia, was it a difficult decision?
I would say it was tough. I was based in Hong Kong.
So because you had quite a pretty good career going on, no yes. investment analyst in some of the top firms. So
I mean, I would take a huge pay cut to even come back.
And a huge risk as well.
Exactly.
Did it take a lot of convincing on the part of family to start this?
I think the family was generally quite supportive. I mean, at least from my parents' perspective in terms of starting this. There is some inertia because they do want me to help out with the family business. But at the same time, I think I'm quite focused into building my own path over the next 10 and 20 years. And I felt like I had the right partners to do so and the right friends to do so. Leaving Hong Kong was difficult because if you look at Hong Kong, minus what you see now with all the protests, actually Hong Kong to me is one of the best places for a young working professional to be in. With the different funds that are operating there, the banks, the different companies, the exposure to China, it's the best place to learn and to grow your own personal brand. And coming back, if you compare the corporate market over here versus what you see over there in Hong Kong, it's very, very different. For example, we released a report on boards in Malaysia. Mm-hmm. Typically, boards in Malaysia are 95% over 40. They are old. Most of them are in two or more boards. They're mostly male. So you're talking about corporate Malaysia is a very cookie-cutter approach. You fit the right Malaysia profile, you'll do well here. You earn a decent salary in probably a GLIC or a GLC, and you'll grow the business, but that's not what I want. I want to build a platform, and I feel like Malaysia is a great place for entrepreneurs to grow. You see the likes of Top Glove, Nirvana, they've grown from zero to multi-billion dollar businesses, and it's a business that's appreciated by around the globe, right? So Malaysia has a good cost base. Our talent is here, they just need exposure. Mm-hmm. A lot of our local graduates are good, but they are just not exposed to global companies, global trends, going overseas. These kind of things matter. And bringing back a lot of my overseas exposure and teaching and growing the team here, it's something that I really enjoy.
All right. So let's talk a bit about where is RHL in the value chain of funding.
Yep. Okay.
What do you focus on?
So in terms of investments, we do quite a variety of investments. From an early stage point of view. So we invest from post-seed to Series A and Series B type opportunities in the technology space. So what we are doing is we are looking for companies, strong founders who are looking to grow their businesses and looking for the right equity partners to grow their businesses. Most of our businesses are tech focused. So what it means is we use technology to leverage the growth of these businesses. And the type of business we are investing vary from consumer type business, we've invested in the healthy snack business to a online cosmetics platform. In healthcare, we invested in a software for third party administration of healthcare claims. We've invested in fintech, we've invested in a Sharia P2P SME loan platform. So our investments are always honestly very.
So how do you pick? What determines that, hey, this is a good investment?
It's actually quite a methodical process, right? Obviously, number one is the founder. It's the key and the most important thing that goes to the business at the moment. And we do, for good or for bad, we do quite a rigorous check into the founder. It goes from stalking their LinkedIn accounts to their Facebook accounts to make sure everything checks out, right? And there's nothing funny going on. You cross-check with different founders, you cross-check with different people in the market to make sure what they're saying is true. Then after that, you go into a financial due diligence process, mm-hmm. where you double check the numbers and projections. And after that, only you do a tech due diligence. So we have two partners who are focused on technology. There's one Lisa, who's with Spotify, who does machine learning there. And there's Tengku, who's a PhD in geomatics, which is more like GPS positioning. So they do kind of the tech due diligence to make sure the tech checks out. If you look at tech companies now, they all talk about AI, machine learning, but in the end, are you actually using technology? These are all fancy words to attract investors, but are you actually using it?
So when RHL first started, I believe the focus was in Southeast Asia, yeah. but you guys have also invested some companies in the US and yeah. other places. So walk us through that.
So the focus actually is purely Southeast Asia. Mm-hmm. So when we first started, when it was just our own money, we did dabble in a few investments in the US. Well, we did like Coffee Meets Bagel, which is a very popular dating yeah. app. We did Game On, which is an AI chatbot. But even those investments are with the idea of helping them expand in Southeast Asia.
Right.
But for now, once the funds evolve, we just focus purely on Southeast Asia.
And personally, how do you sniff out a good deal?
I mean, honestly, sessions like this help where you get your brand out there, meaning that for any company that's looking for capital, they will come to you. And they will always be for Malaysia, I would say I will be the first port of call for most of the investee companies. So that's one. Two is having a good network of entrepreneurs, investors is extremely important. So in this sense, networking within the space. Mm-hmm. Number three is when you're going to target the regional investments, right? So my focus is not only Malaysia, it's Southeast Asia. So you do regional, you need to have a good network of other investors. So whether it's the East Ventures of the world, Indonesia, whether it's the Wave Makers of the world in Singapore, have that ecosystem, share deals, and then mm-hmm. you will get a win-win situation out of it.
All right. So I want to talk a bit about your portfolio.
Yes.
Like you mentioned, you invest in a range of diverse
yes.
sectors. What's most exciting in your portfolio at the moment?
In Malaysia, we've actually really like how Rage Coffee is doing.
Rage.
So we invested in a tech-empowered coffee business. And I mean, if you open your phone, you can see them at the moment. They've grown from about 0 to 12 branches in a matter of 6 months. And they follow the Luckin Coffee model in China, where Luckin Coffee is like beating the hell out of Starbucks. And they've taken that model over here in Malaysia, and they're using this base to expand around the region.
So what was interesting, I thought, when I looked at Rich Coffee is that it's a traditional like brick and mortar
yes.
company, right? Essentially, that's the business, sell
yes.
coffee. What makes this different? Is it just because they, you can, the technology that they use? What exactly that drew you to them?
So to me, okay, as I mentioned about the methodology earlier, like first you look at the founders, right? Mm. The founders are all very strong. They're all ex-Uber, Malaysia office people. And so they have a strong background there. Mm-hmm. So it's Leon and Jevin. And then after that, you look into the way they're trying to build the business. So when they came to us, actually, they were honestly an idea and a piece of presentation deck. And we funded them before even they started their first branch. So what happened was, you see what they're trying to do, right? They're trying to look into analytics in terms of how you purchase coffee, how often you purchase coffee, you push rewards or you push promotions based on that. At the same time, you bundle different items like foods. You partner with different food providers so you can bundle items together and make a lead gen profit out of it. So it's different ways to make money. And I felt like they were very creative, or they were hustlers to build their business. So I know that selling coffee in itself won't be enough for them to grow a multi-million dollar business. But given the way these guys process ideas and execute on those ideas and grow very quickly, I think that's what I want in a founder. And seeing them grow from 0 to 12 branches in just 6 months and off a very limited capital pool, it's actually quite impressive.
And how much involvement do you have with the business
so
as an investor?
The beauty of growth investments is you're not involved on a day-to-day basis. So you're involved more from an advisory perspective. So they come to me when they need like introductions to different mm-hmm. landlords. They need introduction to Petronas to get their coffee sold in Petronas outlets. They need special referrals to certain corporates. That's why I help out, right? So it's more strategic in nature. And I think that's what they need. Day to day, you do want to get involved in day to day. I'm not a buyout fund. I'm not a Navis, for instance, where I come in, buy more than half the company and control the company. I'll generally invest about 5 to 30% of the company, mm-hmm. be an equity partner throughout the rounds, be a patient partner throughout your funding rounds and grow your business together.
So when you say patient, you're definitely looking more long term.
Yes, yes. The fund life is 7 years. So it is quite long.
Okay. What about short-term metrics then, to gauge the performance of the company or if it's time to, you know, exit? Like, do you look at short-term metrics?
Honestly, if there's a way to exit short-term, you wouldn't say no, right? You wouldn't give away the opportunity to take money off the table and return money to investors, which is actually the main part of my job. So from a short-term perspective, the interesting part over the past 12 months is the opening of secondary markets for private investors. Mm-hmm. Secondary markets meaning that if you're invested in an earlier round, you can always sell your shares at a later round when the valuation is higher. And that usually happens when there are angels on the cap table. So when there's angel investors who invested from, let's say, day one 3 years ago, your 3 years now is probably worth 20-30x of what it was in day one. So those guys have opportunities to exit the markets and make a healthy profit. You may not get 100x, but if you have 20-30x, that's a good way to get out of table. So we found ways to enter through secondary markets or to exit through secondary markets. At the same time, from a short-term perspective, there's ways to have trade sales or buyouts. It's something that we are not opposed to.
So is that a performance target for each of the portfolio?
Yes. So in general, the performance target for a fund is about 20-30% IRR target. And that's very much on a high end of venture capital funds in the region. And I think we are very comfortable with meeting that.
All right. So talking about RHL, are you guys looking to raise capital? Because it started with family money, right?
Yes.
And over
so
time.
We've already raised external capital.
Okay.
We will continue to do so. I think being in Malaysia, we do find it tough over the past few years, given what's going on with global markets, 1MDB, politics. It's not the most stable political environment for investors to be extremely comfortable about. But I think over the next 1-2 years, given the efforts the government's trying to do with North Asia, with the US, I think we will see more investors coming in. And as well, I'm trying to get a tailwind of that.
All right. Now, you mentioned about how the markets in Hong Kong and Singapore is very thriving and active compared to Malaysia.
Singapore, so, yeah. Hong Kong, maybe a bit less so now.
So what are your objectives, so your vision? Because it's not just about investing in companies, right? There's a bigger picture to what you guys are doing here in Malaysia.
So the idea for RHL is to become a private markets platform. So you see a lot of the funds in the region give billions of dollars to the likes of KKR, Carlyle, TPG. Mm-hmm. And these are all foreign names. We're all helping foreigners make money. Why not build a Southeast Asian brand? Build a brand that everyone can relate to. Build a brand that's strong, that's meritocratic, that knows what it's doing in the market, that has roots in Southeast Asia. Mm-hmm. And build it across different asset classes, right? Our demographic stories here is strong. Our economic fundamentals are strong. 6%+ growth, about 600 plus million population. But you can invest in, what we're doing now is just VC, but you can do private equity. You can do real estate. You can do advisory. So there's a different ways you can make money in this ecosystem. And I think what we're doing is just the first part of it, the first leg of a multi-year journey. Whether this journey takes 5-10 years, I don't know. Hopefully shorter. But there's a big space there. Investors was asking, what's next for Southeast Asia? Our real estate is not heavily invested in by overseas or institutional investors yet, if you compare to the likes of Korea, Japan, Europe. So there is a space to place there. But there is no strong local brand. There are some small ones here and there, and there are people trying to grow their brands. But there is a space for younger, hungry asset platforms to grow.
And looking across the different sectors you're in, which areas are next big thing for Malaysia?
Yes. In Malaysia, I think healthcare is still a huge area that we can improve on, both from a services software perspective to also hardware, since we have a very cost-effective manufacturing base in Malaysia. So I think we need to double down and hammer down on that. The other thing I feel is in the SaaS space. So software as a service, we do have decent companies where you're focusing on procurement, focusing on HR, focusing on leave and healthcare. Those companies will continue to do well as Malaysia as a base, but they need to use that opportunity to expand across Southeast Asia, because Malaysia actually, from a corporate perspective, is a good market for SaaS business. We have big corporates, paying corporates who are based here. If you can unlock them, you unlock a steady stream of revenue. That's why the likes of McKinsey, Bain, BCG have a big outfit over here in Malaysia. I think they have like at least a couple hundred people. It's because there is good business here for good advisory work, good software that people are willing to pay for.
One of the reasons why there were a lot of media attention on RHL was simply because you guys are so young.
Yes.
I mean, all of your founders are 35 years old and below.
Yep.
Has the age factor, you know, being young, deterred investors or startups to work with you?
Actually, that's, I actually do get that question a lot, especially when you deal with corporates and you're like, why are these young punks coming to my office, right? But you see more and more, I think youth is being valued a bit more compared to, let's say, even 5 years ago. So people embrace the ideas, right? So I'll just give you a simple example. When we're speaking to Tan Sri Lim Wee Chai about, what was it, Getty Images, one of those like photo stock images type of companies, I can't remember the exact one. I was showing him how they were selling his photo to people for $1,200 US, and he's like, why am I not getting a cut of this, right? But yes, someone took a photo of you at a conference, they have full rights over your photo, and they sell your photos to publications. And it's all legal business, and I think this opened the eyes to the older folk. And I think more and more people embrace youth as a way of finding new ideas, new technology. VC is a sexy place to work. For every job role I put out, I get a couple hundred CVs, ranging from Oxbridge graduates, US graduates, plenty of local graduates trying to get in. We do not have enough opportunities to fill these seats because the demand is there for these type of jobs. And people want to come in. So I would say youth is always a factor that people use against us, but we'll just, I'll just say, suck it up and use it to our advantage. You see what the government is trying to do in terms of empowering youth. I think we need to push that even more, right? Because 10 years in technology, it's a lifetime. And having more people who can contribute in terms of technology expertise is very important as we reskill and find a way forward for Malaysia.
So I'd like to get your thoughts on that. There's so much conversation about moving into IR 4.0, AI, data, scientists, and we need more of them.
Yeah.
Your thoughts on that? I mean, looking at the Malaysian perspective,
yes.
Right? Are we doing things right? Your thoughts?
There's a lot of big words that go around.
Yeah.
A lot of conferences. Malaysians love conferences and love officiating things and love all this hoo-ha. But in the end, I view things from an execution perspective. Your question about data scientists, is it necessary? Do we need it? There's been a lot of talk about it. But if you talk to the startups, there's still a big lack of Malaysians that can come into these type of jobs.
So there's not enough job opportunities?
There's a lot of job opportunities, there's not enough people who are able to fill those jobs. Mm. So talking to from a startup perspective, I give this example, Health Metrics, who has this problem where they want to hire data scientists. The guys in the market are not good enough, they need some training to come on board, right? And as a startup, you don't want to take that training risk of 6 months of training. So the government has to come in and de-risk that. Let's say for 6 months, the government will, let's say, pay or subsidize part of the salary. Mm-hmm. That's something I've been proposing to MDEC and trying to get this moving forward. We need to find different ways to reskill our guys, but the need of the human capital is there for data scientists, programmers. There's a big need there. But you can't just get them trained and out of university and expect all these tech companies to hire them immediately. Tech companies want a product that's refined. They don't want a product that's fresh. So private and public sector needs to work together to fill that gap. In terms of IR 4.0, in terms of AI, I think, honestly, we have a long way to go in terms of embracing the right kind of technology. Our corporates are heavily underinvested in tech. If you look at Indonesia, if you look at the top 20 largest corporates, they are heavily invested in venture, technology, they invest themselves in startups, they incubate startups, and I think that's how they embrace technology. Our guys are caught up in their own existential businesses, caught up their old way of doing business, and they don't want to embrace technology as fast as they should. The talk is there. If you look at articles, you look at conferences, all the talk is there, but execution and results, we are falling behind.
And what's stopping that, do you think? Is it just a mindset, cultural, or just lack of awareness, expertise?
I would say, you know, two major things is the culture of taking risk is not there in our environment. Everyone is too afraid of, I don't say losing their jobs, but too afraid of taking risk because it will affect their livelihoods. You will always go for the safer option. And that's apparent in corporates and in government. What happens is, to me, personally, the government needs to incentivize corporates to invest in technology, and then the corporates need to follow suit. But now there's neither, right? There's no incentive for corporates to do so. There's no government policy pushing them to do so. At the same time, corporates are all struggling their existing businesses. They're like, okay, why should I pay this tech company to do this when I'm struggling to make ends meet for my own corporate? So it's that kind of dynamic that you're seeing, but it's a chicken and egg story, right? Like, if not, we'll lose behind. If you look at 2015, we're probably number 3 in terms of tech funding in Southeast Asia. If you look at last year, we're probably at number 5. So we've fallen down the ladder.
Well, why the deterioration?
One is, we have not, over the past few years, marketed our country in the right way. Mm-hmm. People always talk about Indonesia, Vietnam, huge population, yes, but their GDP per capita is still extremely low. Then people talk about Singapore, high GDP, developed market, but population is so small, right? We still have a decent sized population, yeah. 30
so
million.
In a way, if I look at geographic and population and growth, Malaysia is in a pretty sweet spot.
Yes.
It comes to enticing investors and startups. Exactly.
So it depends how you view it, right? And one way you can view it as a sweet spot, and the other way you can say like it's neither here nor there. So to investors, you have to tell them it's a sweet spot because you get a bit of population, you get a bit of developed market, but at the same developing. So you're kind of in between. And that's how you sell the sweet spot. But if you sell it as, I'm neither here nor there, everyone will go to Singapore or Indonesia or Vietnam. And we are at that spot at the moment. Mm. We talk to Korean and Japanese investors. Have you been to Malaysia? No. Have you been to Indonesia and Vietnam over the past 6 months? 100% yes. And we have that big problem there where, why do you want to come here at the moment, right? There's no particular pull factor. So we as ecosystem players, including myself, have to create that pull factor, right? Mm-hmm. We have good startups. Our good startups may not be the best at marketing themselves, but they're good sustainable businesses. So you look at what's happening in SoftBank, WeWork, they're all talking about profitability and sustainability. Our startup actually meet a lot of those criteria because to operate in Malaysia, you've got to be a sustainable business. There's no big brother coming about to pump like $10 million into the business for you to get another 1-2 years of runway. You have to build a good business. So if you market it the right way, Malaysia is still extremely good fundamentals for investing. The PE guys are here on a weekly basis. KKR, CVC, all these big PE guys are here to invest and pump millions of dollars in. In technology, we need to incentivize that. If not, we'll definitely lose out.
Thank you so much, Hamza. Okay. That's great insights into the ecosystem.
Thank you,
Cynthia. And all the best with what you guys are doing at RHL.
Thank you so much for your time.
You.